Transportation Committee to order. It is February 16th at 11:05. And let the record show that members that we have present are Johnson, Pruitt, Peterson, myself, Wilson. Grunberg has been excused. So I'd like to recognize our staff. Over in the middle of the room at the back is Nancy Hemingway, our House Recording Secretary. We have Thatcher, who is our LIO monitor. And my committee aide is Becky Rooney. So before we start, please turn your cell phones off. That would be great if you do that, because it does affect our IT instruments here.
And we're not even driving.
Yeah, and we're not even driving, right? Today we have two bills on the calendar. House Bill 128, which is banning cell phone use for minors. That'll be our first one. And the second one is House Bill 157, mandatory use of headlights. Now, we will then in the last 15 minutes, we will hear an update from the Alaska Mobility Coalition. And no matter what's going on, we will stop at that point in time, because we've kind of, this is the second time they've been scheduled, and so we want to make sure that we fit them in. So Representative Gardner, if you would come up and introduce yourself and tell us about your bill. And we have version A before us, right?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage, District 24. And I realize our subtitle, our working title.
You have to put that a little bit towards you.
Okay, there. All right. Anyhow, I'm happy to have this opportunity to present House Bill 128, banning cell phones for minors while driving.
And before we get going right into it, I'll announce that Representative Munoz has joined us. Go ahead.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I think that the committee has heard some of the ins and outs of varieties of cell phone bills over the years. And for myself, I believe this is the sixth year of efforts working with other people or on my own to try to get a cell phone bill through the legislature. And I think that that history suggests or reinforces the idea that we don't have consensus at all on a cell phone ban, not in this body, and I think not in the public. I mean, there are a lot of people, we love our phones and we use them broadly and are unwilling to give them up for ourselves. I think for minors, however, we have a slightly different conversation. So in my view, there are three main issues that come with every cell phone bill, and that is, should talking on cell phones be banned for all drivers or only for minors? The other issue is about around hands-free cell phone use, and there are various permutations of that. And then the third issue is whether it should be a primary or a secondary offense. If it's a primary offense, people can be stopped by law enforcement for talking on their phones. If it's secondary, it's only if they're stopped for some other reason, they can be fined for also having been on a cell phone at the time. And this bill, quite frankly, is the simplest of all those permutations. House Bill 128 simply says if you are under 18 and you're driving, you cannot be talking on your cell phone. It makes no exemptions for a hands-free cell phone use, and it makes it a secondary offense. And quite simply, to me, that's an obvious issue, because nobody can tell how old you are as you drive past. And we don't want people being pulled over because they might be underage for being on a cell phone. I think we all understand the sort of range of statistics about how cell phone use does cause distraction, and there are higher numbers for automobile accidents when people are on telephone. One study in the University of Utah said that talking on a cell phone is equivalent to driving with a 0.08 blood alcohol level. The National Safety Council estimates about 28% of all crashes involve people talking on cell phones when they're driving. And the reason we're focusing on the youngest drivers is because they are least experienced. They're learning good habits. They're increasing their skills. They're the most distractible. And we simply want to try to catch them at an early age when they're most at risk.
and enforce good habits there. Studies show 16 to 20-year-olds make up about 16% of all car crashes in this state, but they make up 34% of the crashes in which a cell phone is involved. And the same age group has the highest number of fatalities. So when they do have automobile accidents, there's more likely to be serious injury or death. And so it's my hope that we can get a consensus to save lives by banning cell phone use by drivers who are under 18, and just leave it at that. We did not ask for people to come and testify in favor of this bill. I know this committee has heard a bunch of permutations, had a committee bill at one time, and we could do that. But in the interest of time, we've simply included some of the emails of support and some formal support. And I'd like to point out that there are a couple of letters that refer to House Bill 15, and that was the permutation from the last legislative session. And when we understood that this bill would get a hearing and might move forward, we immediately started working on updating our letters of support, but some of them didn't get quite all the way through. But they're still there as a sampling of the support. So that's really the gist of it and the thrust of it. Did I leave anything out? I think not. Be happy to take any questions.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Can you define what a vehicular area is?
Thank you, vehicular area.
And I'm referring to Section A, which says a motor vehicle on a highway or vehicular way or area.
Thank you. Alaska Statute 28.90.990A, Section 30 says a vehicular way or area means a path, way, path, or area other than a highway or private property that is designated by official traffic control devices or customary usage and that's open to the public for purposes of pedestrian or vehicular travel and which way or area may be restricted in use to pedestrians, bicycles, or other specific types of vehicles as determined by the Department of Public Safety or other agency having jurisdiction over the way, path, or area.
Would that be a parking lot?
My guess is yes, but I can't say definitively. Representative Gardner speaking.
Follow up, Representative.
So assuming someone, this law passes and a young person pulls into a Fred Meyer parking lot to make a phone call home saying they're going to be late, some might consider a car running in a parking lot of a Fred Meyer suspicious behavior, and that might be grounds for someone being stopped and pulled over, or they're already stopped, hypothetically say. So that would be grounds for someone to pull them over. So are you saying that someone under this section could be given a citation for pulling over in a parking lot and making a phone call?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I think if they can be pulled over for anything, that would imply they're moving. And
suspicious behavior, Madam Chair, if I might. Suspicious behavior in a parking lot, they're stopped, the parked car is running, it's winter, it's cold, they're calling home, maybe late night or after the thing's closed, a car running in a parking lot of a business to me is suspicious behavior. If I were a police officer, I'd want to know what was going on. I think that's grounds to ask that question, see a person talking on the telephone, and issue a citation under this piece of legislation.
I think it's a fair question to the chair, and I would, I think, need to get a legal opinion on that. I don't know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And until that question is answered, it's going to be very difficult for me to move this very far beyond where we are right now. I think for us to cite someone who's doing something right and leave a loophole that big in a statute is, I think it's incumbent on us to not allow that kind of thing to happen. We don't want to punish people for doing the right thing.
Do you have an amendment?
Not yet.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We have a public safety officer in the room, and I wonder if he would be willing and feel qualified to respond to that question.
Please come forward. State your name and affiliation.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Rodney Dyer. I'm an Alaska State Trooper. I'm stationed in Ketchikan, Alaska. And my understanding, Representative Johnson, through the chair, is that the court has defined operation of a vehicle and driving a vehicle a little bit differently. So for the purposes of a DUI, you could be arrested technically or charged with a DUI for operation of the vehicle, which would be if you were in physical control of that vehicle. However, for legislation such as this, when it clearly says driving a vehicle, it's my understanding that they would actually have to be engaged in the purpose of moving the vehicle, actually driving the vehicle, versus just operation of a vehicle, which would be considered parked in the parking lot. So, and I relate that based on other traffic offenses that we routinely enforce, and our standpoint would be driving a vehicle would be actual process of moving a vehicle down the roadway, and that if the vehicle was parked, it would not be considered driving.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but the operative term you used was the court has decided. So if someone is cited in this, they're going to have to go to court to find out they were innocent or guilty.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, our standpoint would be that if the statute says driving a motor vehicle, if they were parked, we would not be cited for this offense.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions?
Just
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the gentleman at the other end of the panel was mentioning about suspicious behavior. If it was 20 below zero when someone was sitting in their car in a parking lot, would you consider it more suspicious that they had the motor running or that they didn't have the motor running?
Through the chair, Representative, it would not necessarily be suspicious or not suspicious. I can tell you that if the vehicle is stopped, I mean, we have broad ability to go contact the occupants to determine if they're okay or see if something else is involved.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Pruitt.
Continuing on that kind of that vein, if the individual is not driving the car but they have placed their foot on the brake and put it in to drive, is that at that point are they now driving the car?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, from an enforcement standpoint, I would not consider that driving the car. We normally do not get into that level of detail regarding traffic contacts or traffic stops. That's not to say that somebody could not make that determination. It's my experience, though, in the courts that they would find that splitting hair. So that would not be a case that the courts would accept that they considered that the individual was stopped in a parking lot, that they were not driving a vehicle, and that the citation was not warranted. I think they would use their discretion to say that that they had taken a step to make sure that their actions and operation of that phone were as safe as possible, and that's why they were stopped in a parking lot and making a phone call. So I just cannot see a situation in which we would cite somebody for violation of a law like this and have the court say that was an appropriate use of our discretion in issuing that citation.
Follow up on that. So one of the things that we've heard testimony recently on a bill relating to texting, and what in conversation and this kind of dialogue, the legislative intent behind it was that an individual sitting at a red light, or actually sitting at the light, maybe not moving, from what I understood, that they would be, it would be okay for them to text. In this case, if someone were at a light and it were red, would they be able to make a phone call?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, once again, my understanding would be that if the vehicle is stopped, they're not technically driving the vehicle, and therefore it would be allowed under this bill.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Representative Gardner mentioned the high statistics for crash data for people 18 to 20. Do we know at what age that those statistics start to go down? Is it 21, 22? At what age do we see less prevalence of crash?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz.
Incidences.
I'm not really qualified to answer that.
Okay. And then just one other follow-up question. In Alaska, distracted driving is a cause of a lot of accidents, but we're not, as I understand it, able to determine what percentage is tied to actual cell phone use, because in the incident report that you file, cell phone use is not one of the listed reasons for distracted driving. Is that still the case, or has that been remedied?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I'm not familiar with that. I can tell you that our traffic investigative report form has changed over the last few years, and we're trying to incorporate that information. But I'm not sure it's specific enough to break down the cause of the distracted driving. I believe we can indicate that it was distracted driving, but whether it was somebody trying to put on makeup or dealing with kids or whatever, I don't think we capture that information presently.
Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's statistics about, young people driving. What about older drivers? I understand that there's almost a correlation between 16 and 18, and there's a point where it's 65 to something where there's an equivalent efficiency of driving. I want to be positive with it, or lack thereof. So it's okay for someone with the same skill sets that's under 18 to not be able to do it, but someone who is over, and let's hypothetically say 65.
Higher, please.
I'm getting there.
Higher, please.
65, 75, whatever the number is. So it's okay with the same deficiency under this bill for someone who, or efficiency, for lack of a better term. So we're setting up a class of citizens at one end of the spectrum that has equal ability to another class of citizens on the top end of the spectrum. And so we are not, to me, we're setting up class warfare. I don't want to call it warfare, but a class distinction between very young people and very old people who possess roughly the same skills.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not familiar with the statistics. I think that would be better answered by highway safety or perhaps the Department of Transportation. I can certainly agree that distracted driving is bad all around. And, I would not necessarily be in favor of any one group being able to do something that would distract or take away from their ability to safely operate a motor vehicle, including law enforcement officers. And we realize that, we're no better at multitasking than other folks. And we're also well aware that videos come out recently kind of showing that. To that end, we've actually considered implementation of policies in the department to even address that among our people. So I really can't say much more, except that I agree with you. I think distracted driving all around is a safety issue that we need to be aware of, concerned about.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Do you have scramblers on your radios, and I'm using, that's not the right term, but encryption on your two-way radios, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, most of our radios are encrypted. We are transitioning to the Alaska Land Mobile Radio System. Some of our locations are still operating with non-encrypted radios.
And my point to that, Madam Chair, is that I believe that to prevent from tipping off, because I know Anchorage doesn't have encrypted radios, to prevent tipping off people who can pull up a citizen or radio on their iPhone now and listen to police traffic because it's not encrypted, I think it's essential that police officers be able to use cell phones, because that may be the only way they can get a heads up on the bad guys. So I agree with you, the distracted driving, but I don't want you to go so far as to say you can't use it, because there's valid uses for you to have those cell phones. And I can't think of the opportunity, but I'm pretty sure that sometime there's a valid use for someone between the age of 16 to 18 to use a cell phone. And I'm reluctant to set up a class of citizens that we discriminate against just because, it's easy to pick on 16 to 18-year-olds. They can't vote. and I am reluctant to pick on anyone, especially someone who's disenfranchised who can't, in the next election, kick me out of office because they didn't like the way I voted.
I would like to state some facts here. I think that part of this is to help teenagers and people that are learning to drive to create some good habits. And one of those good habits is that you don't answer your phone when you're driving. Another one is when you get in that you think, oh, golly, am I going to be late? Maybe I better telephone now and let somebody know I'm going to be late rather than get going and do it en route. So I really think that if it saves the – I think we as parents and grandparents and as legislators need to think if we can do something to save a life of one of those kids, or maybe many others, because of what might happen if they do that and they veer into the traffic of another car. So there's some valid concerns here, and I think that it's something that we really need to think about, because this will make a difference in how. If they know ahead of time exactly what's expected of them, we help them this way by getting them into the practice of doing the right thing. And Representative Pruitt, did you have some comments?
Yeah, I'd actually just like to comment on something there that, I'll tell you, I come from where if I pick up my phone. And it's my mom, she'll say, "Are you driving?" And she'll hang up on me. So, I mean, you got to understand where I'm coming from on this. But I just want to. You mentioned something about knowing that you're going to be late, and obviously there's many times that happens. But certain times, you can get on the road and find yourself delayed for another reason. You may not. Maybe on the Glen Highway and there's an accident. And at that point, you'd still be moving, maybe very, very slowly, but you could find yourself in a difficult situation where now you're not able to communicate that you're going to be late picking up your children or whatever, or your brother or sister in this case or whatnot. So I think I have concerns with that, as well as if a 16 to 18-year-old were to see something take place and if they were to call in and say, hey, there's someone that's acting erratically, there's someone that is driving in a manner that is dangerous, we're telling them that if you were just a little bit older, you could report it, but you have to deal with it. And I think that's also concerning to me, that we're completely going to disenfranchise these individuals in that way. I just want to make that statement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to go back to your earlier statement that if we can fix something, we should. And if that's going to be the road we go down, why don't we outlaw driving for anyone under 18? That would solve all these problems.
That's a thought.
And so we can carry this to extremes. And I couldn't agree with you more that children should be brought up properly, that their parents should tell them what to do. But as a member of this committee, I'm not prepared to take on the rearing of someone else's children. That is for the family to do. That is not for us to do. If we want to, we could be totally safe for 16 to 18-year-olds. We could just not allow them to drive, and we wouldn't have a single loss of life. And we could fix the problem. But I'm not prepared to go there either. So at what point does the government tell people, any citizen, that we are taking away and we're becoming responsible, and it is no longer the purview of the family, the parent, that truly is responsible for this? I don't want to raise all the 16 to 18-year-olds in this state. I don't think you do. I don't want to take that responsibility, and I certainly don't want to interfere with that life of that parent more than we already do as a legislature and government. I think we should probably get out more than that. So I don't think anyone has to. No one's ever doubted where I stand on my position on things. I don't think anyone doubts where I stand on this one, too. And I'm going to err on the side of the parent raising the child in responsibility. And I tell you, you want to teach a kid responsibility, get him a traffic ticket for talking on the cell phone, and that's the last time it'll ever happen. So I don't think we're, I certainly don't want anyone to perish in that accident, but I'm just reluctant to step into a parent's role. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think you really hit the nail on the head. If they can get a ticket for something like this, it won't happen again. So I think that that's probably a good point.
I just want to respond.
Representative Munoz?
As a parent of a young driver, I would appreciate having a tool like this to help to discourage unsafe driving behavior. Most teenagers are married to their cell phones. I mean, they are always in hand, and they're always, it seems, constantly in use. The last place they need to be in use is when they're driving the car. So I think very strongly that this should move forward, and I want to see, I do want to have an opportunity to vote on it today. I think it's an important public safety measure, and I appreciate you bringing it forward.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I was just sort of surveying the crowd. I don't see any 16 or 17-year-olds here today. And in fairness, if they were had an opportunity to be on the witness stand today, they would probably say that someone that was at my level of maturity with a smartphone is a waste of good technology. And I guess it's all in your perspective. And I know it sounds like we're being overly protective, or government is taking over the role of parenting. But we have the law on the books where if you are 16 or 17, you are allowed to drive. And I think, and unless we're, I don't think we're in any, anyone is talking about changing that. So we're just trying to develop some good, help young people develop good driving habits so those parents don't have to go to the hospital, or unfortunately occasionally may be forced to bury their child. That's the worst possible situation to put a parent in.
Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I hear that the last place that we should have this is allow a child to, or a kid to be on their phone, is in the car. And there's concern about fatality issues there. Well, we still allow them to have their phones with them at school. And that's the last place, I guess, I'd want them to have them as well, where I get teachers calling me up and saying I'm trying to teach kids, and they're on their phones texting or they're calling people. So it kind of goes back to, again, to do we feel like we want to step in? That's kind of a parent decision. Does the parent want that child to have that phone in the classroom? Does that parent want that child to have the phone in the car? It's still, we're stepping in and parenting. And I don't know that that's really, I think that's a slippery slope to find ourselves in, is a way to step in and tell parents that we think that the way what they've done with their children is not correct, and that we want to step further. So I think it's a slippery slope. And I do have one question I do want to ask the sponsor. This does include hands-free as well. They wouldn't be able to talk on a hands-free device as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Through the chair.
Thank you, Madam.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anybody online? No one online? Okay, we do have someone in the audience. And so, Albert Judson, if you would like to come forward and give us your testimony.
My name is Albert Hudson. I'm a registered voter and a resident of Chernalaska. I'm a former VPSO and police officer. Everything I'm recommending is from statistics, hardcore statistics, life or death. There is no gray areas, none whatsoever. Nothing to be theoretical about. Nothing to be, well, where people need to act with courage, especially in the legislature. On the last day of August 2007, I got run over by a driver here in Juneau by Centennial Hall. And my arm has a piece of metal in my right arm. And since 2007, I've had more physical problems than any other time in my life since that time. And a day after I got run over here in Juneau, a dog got run over. When I got run over, not one word was said about me getting run over by the police department or the newspaper. A day after I got run over, a dog got run over. The dog made the front page of the newspaper. Now, I would like to ask the committee, how much can a person be distracted when they're talking on a cell phone? There's a man that walked into me in the village, and he was talking on the cell phone. He was walking. He hit me in the center of my chest. He was distracted enough not even to see me. And even after he hit me, never apologized, nothing. He was my own nationality, Clinkett. But I have statements that I've taken out of statistics. Like I said, hardcore statistics. While teenagers are texting, they spend about 10% of their time outside of the driving zone. Answering a text takes about 5 seconds, the length of a football field. Talking on a cell phone makes a young person reaction time as slow as a 70-year-old. 21% of the fatal car crashes are teenagers 16 to 18 years old. Teen drivers are 4 times more likely to get into a car crash than any other people. That's both cell phones and texting. In Missouri, a 19-year-old slammed into the back of a construction car truck, and he was killed along with a 15-year-old. And there were 38 other kids that were injured. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has a graduated licensing program. In the Learner State, beginning to New Orleans in 16, lasting 6 months, with at least 30 to 50 hours of parent-certified supervised practice. At the intermediate stage that lasts until they're 18, there is a nighttime restriction around 9 or 10 p.m., and they're allowed no more than one teen passenger.
Mr. Judson, we kind of want to keep it right on to having a cell phone.
Well, I'm including texting because of the fatalities.
Yep, that's fine. Just using the cell phone at all.
And it's a recommendation of mine to amend this bill to include texting because it's so dangerous. Because the accident that happened with that 19-year-old was so rotten. How can we afford that here in this state? That driver was texting.
Yeah. Mr. Judson, if we don't let them have a cell phone, they can't text. So this does include texting.
Well, I'll answer that later. The National Transportation Safety Board called for all states to impose a total ban on handheld and hands-free devices based on fatal accidents. This is not based on injuries. This is not based on crippling. This is not based on long-term care. Alaska is weak on long-term care. 30 states, including Washington, D.C., banned cell phone use by all novices, novice drivers, especially those under 18. Every year, 4,000 to 8,000 car crashes occur related to cell phones. 7 states have primary laws that ban handheld cell phones. California, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Washington, and District of Columbia. In 2011, Delaware signed a similar law. 30 states ban all texting by drivers, and this is a primary ban. It's not a secondary ban. I'm basically opposed to a secondary ban, because you need an excuse to pull somebody over. It should be a primary ban because of the statistics. Half of all the states include a category of handheld or electronic equipment included on all accident reports. And now, this is by police departments. And based on what happened to me, I believe it should be mandatory for both state and municipalities to categorize cell phones and other electronic equipment in accidents. And lastly, because not only because of what happened to me, but because I believe that the reporting in this state is either not reported or it's too difficult for policemen or newspapers to report cell phones or texting or any other electronic devices in their reports. It should apply to all those under 19 based on national statistics, hardcore statistics. It should apply to all learners and intermediate drivers. If the state begins a graduate driver licensing program here in the state, there should be mandatory reporting by all municipalities and state police on cell phones, texting, and electronic devices. In case of fatalities, should a teenager be tried like an adult? Should this apply to all school bus drivers and transit drivers, both state and city? And when did the state first consider banning cell phones while driving? If you multiply this by 4,000, for example, 5 years ago, you multiply 4,000 by 5 years, it's 20,000 car crashes in the last 5 years. That's not including Alaska. And I don't believe that there should be any gray areas in this. I believe it should be very definite. I believe that the legislature should have a black and white determination on this. I don't believe any theoretical questions will or should stop this legislation. I believe the time is now to change this law and include texting, include the recommendations that I recommended. And also, I would like to give this committee my, where I got my statistics, along with this poster.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Some very heartfelt testimony. Thank you very much. Any questions? Any more comments?
You just killed Eric.
Would I hear a motion?
Ma'am.
Do you want to sum up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to respond. This is Representative Gardner for the record, and I'd like to respond to some of the issues that were raised during the discussion. And I'd like to thank Mr. Dial and also Mr. Johnston for their testimony. Let's see, I was trying to keep a record here. I believe it was Representative Munoz who asked about insurance company, asked about, or maybe it was Peterson, when drivers got to be more safe. And what came to my mind is insurance companies. You know, they see, you can't rent a car. Some companies won't rent to you until you're 21, 23, and I think at 25 they'll rent to anybody over 25 if you have the requisite driver's license and documents. So insurance companies, we know, are masters of studying the data, and I think that gives us an indication. Let's see. Representative Johnson asked about senior citizens, and in your packet you will find Alaska data for accidents and using the, by age of driver using a cell phone. Let's see, there are a couple different permutations, but this one looks like this. And this is Alaska specifically, and you can see that for 2009, in the age range that's 66 to 70, there were zero such crashes, while there were eight in our target population. The preceding year, there was one crash with a cell phone for the age group 61 and older. And the youth, obviously, in all of these are higher and higher. So that's Alaska-specific data. I think part of the difference is that when seniors are driving, they're less likely to be talking on the cell phone. They just don't use them as often. I mean, my dad and his wife have cell phones. They don't even turn them on. They take them everywhere they're driving, and they're never on or charged. So it doesn't make any sense to me, and they won't give you the number. So it's just kind of silly. But my kids might. So I think those are two factors. Representative Pruitt expressed concern about a child wanting to call home, seeing dangerous driving on the highway. That is actually already in statute for all drivers. And it's 1181.320. It's called justification and necessity. If you see illegal or dangerous activity, you can take action that includes calling it in if necessary. And Representative Johnson expressed concern about interfering with parental rights. I myself am in the same situation as Representative Munoz, and when my children were teenagers and learning to drive, I could say, this is my car, you will not use a cell phone in my car. But we had a lot of experiences. I mean, not all parents can enforce that on their own, and being able to say, you can beg and plead however much you want, but it's the law, I couldn't approve it if I wanted to. And I always found the few circumstances where that happened, where the kids wanted to do something, say, at another household, and it was all banned by that parent. Don't even bother asking me, because so-and-so says you can't, and it's at their house. So I think it really does help parents enforce what they want to when they can call in that bigger tool. though. I believe that this is a question of public safety. I think there is, even though there isn't on this committee necessarily, I think there's broad public support for doing it for our youngest drivers, and I do believe that passage of this legislation will save lives in Alaska.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed in the statistics they go 16 to 20. Why did you cut it off at 18?
Through the chair, that's the way the data comes to us. That's the way it's collected by the state. So we just kind of took what was available.
Well, I understand that's what the data says, but your bill says 18 and the data says 20.
Oh, through the chair. It's because I think there's a well-established template for the state and for parents passing laws that start at 18. At 18, you can join the military. At 18, you can vote. At 18, you can sign contracts. At 18, you can quit school. Well, 16, you can quit school. But, you know, you pick a date. If the committee wanted to change the age, I'd be open to that. But 18 is the age where most students are through high school. They're, in some ways, achieving a certain level of adulthood. And I think that makes sense to me to just
follow up. Is the data available for 16 to 18? What I see here is, and that's what we're talking about, but you know, you skew the numbers when you say there's 20 between 16 and 20, and from 21 to 25 there's 9, which is almost half of the others. So if you break that in half, are we really only talking about 9 accidents between 16 and 18? And what's the numbers? Are we capable of getting that kind of information?
Through the chair, we probably could. But I would expect that if you were to isolate it by every age, the trend would be that the older the driver was, the fewer the accidents there would be. I don't know that it's worthwhile to ask researchers to kind of break it out in all that much detail. I mean, in this case, I guess the committee wasn't aware that the data was in the packets anyway, and oftentimes, you know, it just doesn't add that much more to the discussion.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, Madam Chair. First a comment and then another question for the the comment will be related to actually some of the information that you gave us from the Juneau Empire last year. Stated that an insurance industry study released last year by the Highway Law Data Institute found that state laws banning the use of handheld devices to make calls or send text messages while driving have not resulted in fewer vehicle crashes. What I'm hearing is the reason that we're doing this is because there are crashes that are taking place because of this. But in the data that you gave us here, we're using Juneau Empire from last year. It says that's not necessarily the case. So again, that kind of draws to why would we necessarily need to do this? The second thing that I would, and there's the question though for the sponsor, have you ever thought of instead of banning it for just like for the 2 years, the 16, 17-year-olds. Also in the data that you gave us, the science of safe driving among adolescents, the second bullet, it says that the crash fatality rate is highest for 16, 17-year-olds, with the first 6 months after licensure the most dangerous, remains the highest through age 24. Is there a thought to do some sort of graduated license type concept? If they're most dangerous right after receiving their license for 6 months, is like some other countries, some other, I think even states, to say for 6 months after getting your license, if you're between the age of 16 and 18, you can't use a cell phone, and then afterwards using a cell phone. Is that something that's been taken into consideration or thought about?
Through the chair, actually, yes. And it's something that Representative Gruenberg sort of proposed in the same way. I think some states say you can't have passengers up to a point. I believe that it's workable, and I think it's a good policy to do it until you're 18. If the committee wants to do something different, then that would be up to the committee. But my proposal, and we just landed on doing it to 18.
Another question. It's not a follow-up, and I just want to confirm, this is secondary or primary?
Secondary.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. In answer to Representative Pruitt, we do have a graduated license law on the books now, and I think I'm not exactly sure of the exact time frame. I think it's 6 months where you're supervised while driving.
Yeah.
But it doesn't address the cell phone issue.
So, Madam Chair, and this is just maybe there's a possibility of
revising that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Of revising that and adding that as part of the part of that limitation, I guess you'd say. I mean, I know we've had something before on cell phones before us before, and one of the questions I had then, and I still don't hear it, is people ask, what about other distracted driving that causes accidents? I mean, I went to school with a young lady when I was in high school who was changing her radio and totaled a car. She ran into someone. And usually I don't seem to find data on the radio or on kids and other things. But I know that there's other distractions, too. It seems like this is kind of the popular thing to, and I know sometimes it's frustrating to see someone on their phone and they pull over, but it also makes me just as frustrated when they don't have their phone and they cut me off, too. So it almost seems like we're targeting something. But maybe this is, if this is an issue with this age group and we have a provisional license, maybe we should include it in that provisional license as for the 6 months or so. Anyways.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the reason that we're doing it with younger people is because they're in the process of learning good habits. Yes, anybody can make a mistake picking something up or handing cookies to their baby or whatever. It is there's no end of possible distractions. But the population to whom this bill would apply is in the process of learning habits. We know that they are more distractible than adults. We know they're more impulsive than adults. And when they do have, they have a disproportionate share of serious vehicle accidents. And in the accidents that they do have, they're more likely to have serious injury or death than the population at large. And whether that's because they're driving faster or don't respond promptly or whatever that is, that's just the fact. And so, you know, my effort here, and I hope the committee will support it, is to save lives in a way that's relatively simple. It's inexpensive. It reinforces parents who tell their children, I do not want you to talk when you're driving in the car. And I think it's a public safety issue.
Okay, what we're going to do now, we're going to set the bill aside, and we'll bring it up again.
Thank you.
I think you'll be able to work with maybe some of the comments that have been brought up, and with any member of the committee that you would like to.
Can I ask the sponsor one question?
Representative Johnson.
I have kind of drafted an amendment. I want to make sure you're receptive to it before I go any further. But it basically says eat, put on makeup, drink coffee, change the radio, or use an entertainment device, because that's distracted driving too. Would you be willing to work with me on crafting that kind of language? Because if we're going to do this, we might as well do it.
Through the chair, I'd be willing to talk with you about it. I can't make a commitment at this time to support
it. Then I do want to work with you on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much and for bringing your bills to us, and we'll take it up again at another time. The next bill that we have before us is Representative Kawasaki, House Bill 157, and please come forward and introduce yourself, and we have your bill is version A. So you aren't Representative Kawasaki, so explain.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for noticing that. I'm Tyler Stanton, intern for Representative Kawasaki. He unfortunately can't be here right now. Hopefully he makes it out at some point, but I don't have eyes in the back of my head. So if he does, let me know. So today I'm here to introduce House Bill 157. The title reads, An Act Relating to the Use of Headlights When Operating a Motor Vehicle. Now I'm just going to give a summary of the sponsor statement.
Just one moment, please. Briefings.
I will be open to any questions. House Bill 157 addresses a key goal of Alaska Highway Safety Office's Strategic Highway Safety Plan. This plan recommends changing state law to require car and truck headlights use at all times. Research has shown that research shows a decrease in traffic accidents where daytime running lights are used. The effectiveness of the headlights on laws can be seen in Alaska on the Seward Highway. In the mid-90s, signs were installed along the highway from Anchorage to Seward requiring motor vehicles to have headlights on at all times. The Department of Public Safety and the Department of Transportation acknowledged the effectiveness of the headlight usage with instructional signs and saving lives. Similar results have been seen in other countries located in polar regions like Alaska when using this headlights on rule. In Sweden, Studies have found that the requirement to use headlights at all times reduced crashes, crash rates by 20% in urban areas and 17% in rural areas. HB 157 will increase the safety on Alaska's roadways, making all vehicles easy to see while travel, especially during Alaska's unique long periods of dusk and dawn. I'm open to any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do I hear, does anyone have any questions? Okay, what we're going to do then is I've got people online, or maybe they're here online. Okay, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 people online, so let's go to them then. Michael Bravarsky, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, and you're coming pretty loud, so you can back off just a little.
Okay.
That's better. And you're from Homer. Go ahead and state your name again and who you're representing.
My name is Michael Bavarsky, and I'm representing myself and any other independent Alaskans who don't want to have this bill thrust upon them. All animals become inured or used to stimuli. That if we keep increasing the stimuli, what we're really doing is creating the need to further increase the stimuli as people become inured to it. An example is a school bus. At one time, school buses were yellow, and people looked out for yellow buses. As people became more inured to school buses, less observant, less careful, we found the need to put flashing lights. Now we have strobe lights on the roof. What next? Road flares? You can't get people to be safe and responsible by merely increasing stimuli that way. I think I have a good example of how I almost had an accident on Turnagain Arm. I was on my way to Anchorage, coming out of Turnagain Pass on that long straight stretch along Turnagain Arm. And I went past a vehicle in front of me that was going slowly. And I looked down the road and I saw a lot of headlights, and I waited till there was a long space between headlights where I knew I could safely pass. And as I pulled into the opposing lane, I realized just in time that there was another car in that space that did not have headlights on. And that was a very frightening experience to me, and it was a good example to me, a good lesson to me, that what I was doing was not really looking for vehicles, I was looking for headlights. And that's exactly what's going to happen when everybody drives with headlights on. Just as people now do not see another vehicle, soon they will not see other headlights because they become too accustomed to it. We need to train or work in other ways to get people to be, as I said, more observant, more conscientious, and more careful without increasing stimuli that they will really become used to. Other downside to the headlight bill is the energy drawer on the alternator requiring more fuel. I know you claim it's just a little bit of extra fuel, but it does add up and it is significant. Another thing is dead batteries. Many people who do not have newer cars with automatic shutoffs will experience dead batteries when they forget to shut their headlights off. And more frequent headlight and taillight replacement. Another downside of this, I think we're usurping responsibility from people, and in doing so, we're really taking their power away from them to be responsible for themselves. So in a word, we need to teach people to be more responsible. Also, as far as all these studies go, that your printed brochure here says documented crash reductions of 5 to 15%. Well, we do have a range of 5 to 15%. I suspect the truth is really closer to 5%, which is not terribly significant. I also doubt the accuracy of these studies because they don't take all other factors into account that might have accounted for the small decrease in crashes. Most studies are conducted to prove a point, not to honestly assess the situation objectively. That's all I have to say on that. I do have one small comment I would like to make about the other bill
Go ahead.
I think nobody should be allowed to use a cell phone in the vehicle. I've almost had two collisions or run-ins with people using cell phones. None of them were young people. They were all probably around middle age. I'm a senior citizen myself. And I swerved onto a shoulder on the highway just last year and just barely missed somebody who I'm not even sure was aware that he almost hit me. He was actually crossed the line. He was driving in my lane, and he was opposing traffic. So I think young people have very good reflexes that might make up for their inexperienced driving, but I believe a cell phone should be outlawed in vehicles altogether.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wabarski. Any comments? Okay. Don't see any hands raised. So thank you very much for your testimony. And we'll go now off net to Craig Bashirs in Anchorage. Go ahead and state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Craig Bashir. I'm with the Alaska Motorcycle Safety Advisory Committee. We advise the Commissioner of DOT and PF on motorcycle safety matters. And I'd like to make a comment on this bill. First, I'd like to thank you all for your work on public safety. It is an important thing to work on. Unfortunately, sometimes when we're working on public safety, we tend to not see how it creates unsafe effects in other areas. And this is one of those such bills. For us motorcyclists, I should also mention I am a motorcycle instructor. And for us motorcyclists, one of the things that we're taught is that we divide the lane into three pieces, right, left, and center. And generally speaking, we ride in the right or the left side of the lane in order to keep ourselves as safe as we can. Right now, motorcycles are required by law to have their headlights on at all times, and that's because we're small and we're hard to see. And so by having our headlights on, it's supposed to increase our visibility to other motors. Unfortunately, if this bill passes into law, one of the things that could be created for people such as myself, people such as Representative Gruenberg, who also rides a scooter, is that when opposing traffic is coming towards us and passing, our headlights could be lost in the headlights of the vehicle behind us. Because we're small, the opposing vehicle that's passing could simply see our headlight as the headlight of the larger vehicle behind us, not being able to judge properly their time or distance for their passing, thereby creating a quite possibly deadly scenario for motorcyclists. We're a small segment of society that uses the roads, and while this bill could, you know, stop some crashes from happening, the effect on motorcyclists, it's not just a simple crash. When we go down on the highway at those kinds of speeds, it's generally deadly. It rarely do you walk away from something like that. So I'd have to say that we're opposed to all motorcycles in the state are opposed to this bill for the simple reason that it places us in harm's way and it doesn't give us anything to help us protect ourselves. If additional language would allow motorcyclists to use modulated headlamps, then it would give us a way once again to distinguish ourselves from the other vehicles on the road. Right now, any kind of lamps that blink or turn are illegal because they're for emergency use only. And if all vehicles on the road are using headlamps, I think you've just placed motorcycles in the need of having emergency lights to keep themselves safe from the other motorists on the road. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No questions. Okay. Next off net is Aves Thompson from Anchorage. Aves?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Committee. My name is A.S. Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association, and I'd like to testify on behalf of the association on House Bill 157. I'll make this short. This action will, in fact, reduce crashes and promote safer driving. We have no objection. But we certainly can understand and appreciate the arguments of the motorcyclist and the gentleman from Homer that talked about increasing levels of awareness and how we get inured to those kinds of things, and would urge the committee to consider those comments carefully. So that's all I have to say on the subject, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Okay. No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll go to the Anchorage LIO, Boyd McPhail.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon.
I'm Boyd McPhail. I'm Legislative Affairs Officer for Aid of Alaska. That's Alaska Bikers Advocating Training and Education. I would like, as my organization's representative, to state that we oppose this bill. As Mr. Brashear said earlier, we get caught in the sea of headlights and not be seen. One of the other distractions that we would have facing us out on the open road is the stimuli from the lights themselves, because from a great distance, if you would hold your two fingers up close together in front of your face and pretend like you're looking at the car down the road, as you approach that car, your fingers will separate and your lights will separate, as you probably all have noticed before. At that point, you now know that you have a vehicle in front of you. You can determine rate of speed and how close they are to you. With a motorcyclist, we only usually have one headlight, and if we have two, they're very close together. As we approach a car who wants to make a pass, then that driver is used to seeing two headlights as a relative safe distance that he can judge to pass by. With ours only being a single headlight, that operator may look out there real quick and say, the lights are very close together, that's far enough, I can pull out and make the pass. And hence, now we got to contend with a 3,000-pound vehicle, coming into our lane as we're riding down the road. And as Mr. Bergier says, there's no winner in a motorcycle accident for the motorcyclist. No matter who's at fault, we're always losing. The other thing I have to say is that if you notice that on the railroad, on the engines, they have alternating headlights back and forth on them that they use, and they found that they use those because they found that with all their lights on the engine approaching a crossing, people could not tell speed and distance that engine is from the crossing. Hence, they started with the alternating headlights, which help reduce accidents there. As a motorcyclist, the modulating headlight, which actually I'll correct Mr. Brashears, it is legal through the CFRs. They're a pretty expensive piece of unit. And to have this bill pass without any financial restitution to motorcyclists so we can install these units on our motorcycles so that we now become distinct again in the sea of headlights for our visibility, our own protection and stuff. we cannot support this bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McPhail.
Thank you. Any questions?
Does not look like it.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
The bill's sponsor would like to make a couple comments.
This is Tyler Spann, intern to Representative Kawasaki. I would just like to address some of the concerns raised by the motorcycle advocates. I'll preface this with I had the benefit of helping the representative unload his motorcycle this past weekend, and so I want, you know, Representative Kawasaki has the interest of motorcyclists and vehicle drivers in this intent of the bill. So I want that to be known. And I also would like to let the people calling in on behalf of the motorcycle advocacy groups that we do have a research analysis done by the U.S. Department of Transportation that is online. And a quick quote from there is on page 17, and it has shown that headlight systems have also been shown to reduce fatal opposite direction crashes between a motorcycle and passenger vehicle by 23%. And so I'm glad they called in and raised their concern, but I would like to know that this is in the best interest of everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, questions from the committee? Representative Johnson?
Yeah, and you knew it. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been sitting here kind of perusing Section 28, and most of the sections where there's a violations, they name the level of infraction. Why? What's an infraction? I mean, you're guilty of an infraction. At what level is that, and why is it not stated in here?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, thank you for your question. I am not qualified right now to answer that question. I know this hopefully will be in judiciary next, and we can get that answer back to you in writing if you'd like.
Madam Chair, I don't serve on judiciary.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any other questions? Representative Pruitt.
Maybe not. It might not actually be for the sponsor, but it may be for DOT. I'm just trying to understand. And if you can answer this, great. When is it currently illegal to drive without your lights on?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I have a vague understanding of that, but there are definitely more qualified people in this room, so at this time I'll turn it over to them. Thank you.
Is there someone in the room that can come up and answer that question for us?
My name is Michael Vigue. I'm the Chief of Statewide Planning for the Alaska Department of Transportation. And Madam Chair, I have the answer to Representative Pruitt's question. Through the Chair, Representative Pruitt, 13 AAC 04010, it's the Alaska Administrative Code. It lists when lights are required to be on. And it says here that lights are required to be illuminated between 1/2 hour after sunset and 1/2 hour before sunrise, or any other time when, because of insufficient light or other atmospheric conditions, persons or vehicles on the highway are not clearly discernible at a distance of 1,000 feet. And then it goes on to say stoplights, turn signals, and other signaling devices must be illuminated as required by this chapter. And every vehicle traveling on a highway or vehicle way or area must illuminate lights when traveling on any roadway that is posted with signs requiring the use of headlights. And lastly, it says for purposes of C, which is if the signs are posted, lights include low-intensity headlights and daytime running lamp devices that meet standards in 49 Code of Federal Regulations.
Okay.
Representative Pruitt.
Right now, I know if I go down the Seward Highway, I'll see the big signs that must drive.
Correct.
Who determines that? Is that in, because it mentioned where posted. Do you guys determine that, or have we put that in statute?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the Department of Transportation made the determination to post those signs on all four of the current highway safety corridors.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this you may not be able to answer this, but have you noticed an increase or a decrease in motorcycle accidents in those corridors where lights are required all the time? I mean, do we have any empirical data that says they're up, down, sideways? Do we break it out to that level? And this, it may be a tough question, but it would kind of go to what the motorcyclists are saying, if we've seen an increase or a decrease or no change.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not aware of any specific data on motorcycle crashes resulting from headlight use or non-use. One of the things to understand is when we put countermeasures in the highway safety corridors, there's a number of things that are happening at once. So it's a difficult to correlate between the use of the headlights directly to the instances of increase or decrease of crashes, because at the same time of putting the signs up for the requirement for headlights, we've also done things like there's increased law enforcement presence in the safety corridors, there's centerline rumble strips, there's fog line rumble strips. So it's difficult to correlate one specific item that was done to the crashes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just thinking maybe we might have some data on that, but thank you.
Okay. What's the wishes of the committee? Ms. Emprut?
Would you like for me to entertain? Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 157, Version A, with the accompanying zero fiscal note out of committee with the recommendations, individual recommendations.
Okay. Do I hear any objections?
I object. Just because I'm objectionable, Madam Chair.
Okay, sorry. Representative Johnson objects. Would the Secretary call the roll?
Yes.
No.
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 No. Okay. We'll take a brief at ease at this moment just so that they can get ready for the next presentation. And is Mr. Levy online now so that we can hear your comments? We have the presentation up on the screen. And we have someone to run the page, change the pages, or change the slides. So go ahead and give us your name and your affiliation.
Great. Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. Madam Chair, members of the Transportation Committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is David Levy, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mobility Coalition. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about my organization, some of my priorities this session, and show you some ads that we're running across the state that talks about what public transportation is in Alaska. So I appreciate, Madam Chair, your staff being available to help us set this up as well. Thank you. The Alaska Mobility Coalition, if you go to page 2, is a private nonprofit membership organization. We represent and advocate for public and community transportation across the state. Go to page 3. We have members all over the state, over 110 members, from Bethel in the north to Ketchikan in the south, and everything in between. And you see on page 4 and page 5, it gives a sample of our member organizations. We have tribal governments, tribal communities, nonprofit organizations, transit systems, disability organizations, trucking associations, consultants, and again, everything in between. We have, Madam Chair, two priorities this session, and I don't want to take a lot of time talking about that because I think your committee has dealt with some of them already, but I did want to take this opportunity to thank your committee, as well as Representative Munoz for her support for House Bill 131, which would create a statewide task force on public and community transportation. I think there is a role, as has been discussed earlier, for the state in how travel, public transportation is coordinated and to look at ways of making it efficient statewide. So I appreciate your committee's support on that. The second priority in the gap, which is on page 7, is a state partnership in public transportation in Alaska. Last year, the legislature, for the first time, became a partner in how public transportation is provided, and provided $1 million, which was spread across the state and really allowed transit systems all over the state to expand service across their communities, adding weekend service and evening service, adding additional bus routes, adding additional vehicles to really meet the growing demand for public transportation. That $1 million really generated about an 80-20 ratio of about another $4 million in federal, tribal, and other money. So we think that's a good project. We ask for the committee's support when that comes before you again. In the capital budget. And the last thing I wanted to do is we have a couple of videos. If you go to page 8, and I think Madam Chair, your staff has those available. We've been running a couple of ads across the state. One is a 30-second ad that ran in December and January all over the state on KTUU here in Anchorage and statewide, and KTVF in Fairbanks. It talks about what public transportation is all about in our communities. And so, Cliff and Becky, if you want to run those now, the first one is the 30-second ad.
Alaskans seem to always be on the move. Here, there, and everywhere. Alaskans are just about everywhere. The Alaskan Mobility Advantage represents public, private, and community transportation providers from around the state. Working together, we help keep Alaskans on the go. Connecting customers with businesses, workers with employers, Alaskans with Alaskans. In Alaska, the going is big.
Great. Yeah, the second ad that we developed is a 90-second ad. It really talks about examples of public transportation, not just in our urban areas, but all over the state. And that's a 90-second ad that we've been running on our website, and our members have as well, and also on Facebook. If we could run the 90-second spot, that'd be great.
Alaskans seem to always be on the move. Here, there, just about everywhere.
The combination of the parking garage and the transit center has really been a plus for all of downtown. It increases the activity down here, and certainly the recognition and identity of transit in the downtown.
We want to do more, and so we're going to really work towards increasing the service area and increasing the quality of service. I believe those are things that people in Sitka really feel good about.
The Alaska Mobility Coalition represents public, private, and community transportation providers from around the state.
But one of the reasons people don't take the bus is because it's not convenient. So make it more convenient, more buses, more frequent. Gas prices got pretty high. We got a few more people that were interested in riding the bus then. Had a lot of people that were riding in to get to the fair and getting home from the fair. And, you know, just kind of the opportunity to get around and not have the hassle and the headache of having to drive yourself.
Working together, we help keep Alaskans on the go. Connecting customers with businesses, workers with employers, Alaskans with Alaskans. In Alaska, the going is good.
And now, just my brief presentation. If you go to the last page, if you would, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee?
Look at the size of that moose.
Representative Peterson?
Well, I was just looking at the
the picture there, that I'm just thinking that's a beautiful moose. Is that superimposed on that picture, or was that a real picture?
That's a real picture. Madam Chair, Representative Peterson. Actually, it's courtesy of the Anchor Staley News.
Wow.
The moose is waiting for the bus.
You're going to need a new door. I think he's going to tear it apart with that rack he's got.
Now, with the money that you got from the state this past year, how much more ridership did that make a difference with?
You know, Madam Chair, that's a really good question. And the money was awarded in July, and it kind of gone through the grant process over the fall. So I don't have all the final numbers for you, but I can present to you and get to you in your office a kind of a breakdown of the increased ridership and kind of where that was.
Okay, great.
And get that to your office.
Thank you very much.
I have a quick question. I'll take advantage of the opportunity since you're on the line, David. This is Kathy Munoz, and I was just hoping that you could speak to the importance of coordinating transportation between the agencies and the nonprofits and how that maximizes the money that comes into state. Would you touch on that, please?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Munoz, again, and I appreciate Representative Munoz's support for coordinating transportation of state. You know, it's really key to how transportation is provided. You know, Alaska is unique in how we provide transportation because people go by car and by bus and by van and by ferry and by boat and by snow machine and dog sled and everything in between. An airplane as well. All of them have a view and a focus in terms of how to move people in their local communities. And coordinating that has always been a challenge and is continuing to be a challenge. And I think that there is a role for the state to kind of help coordinate that to ensure that there are greater efficiencies. There are many state agencies, for example, that provide some sort of public transportation in terms of funding or in terms of other resources that they provide, but they don't talk to each other. And I think one of the tasks of the task force, the one that's currently served under administrative order, and the one hopefully that will be signed into law in the next few weeks, it really will look at how to make that more efficient, how to get these different modes of transportation to talk to each other, how to get communities to talk to each other, and nonprofits and tribes to work together to really make a strong message in terms of coordination. It's just kind of an aside. When the governor's task force started doing its work here several years ago, they heard from a community in southeast Alaska, and there was a person with a disability who lived in that community and wanted to go to work and couldn't go to work because there was no accessible van in that town. And the only one that had an accessible van was the school district. And the school district, under their policies, couldn't allow someone that was not a student to utilize their vehicle. So that person was stuck at home. And, you know, we hear stories about that all over the state, of people who are trying to kind of move from rural villages into either Bethel or Anchorage or Fairbanks for medical care, and some of the challenges trying to get transportation to get their medical care. So, you know, coordinated transportation is really key in terms of getting people to move efficiently and effectively around our state.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. We really appreciate it. And thank you for allowing us to hear you and for being so patient because we didn't get to you before. We really appreciate your patience.
No worries. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We will not be there will be a meeting next Tuesday, and we will be hearing three bills, and we'll see you all then. Okay. Thank you very much.